You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction.
It's the Rediscover the Road sales event. Finance a 2020 Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or get a cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.
I had to tell Steph today, I tell you guys, the one thing I miss about being in studio for this show is the chairs. I need a new chair. I need a back support chair. I can't sit at my dinner table chair. What kind of chairs you got cooking? I got a brutal chair.
Yeah, I got kind of the same thing as you. It's not like it worked for the first little while. Maybe I'm just used to it now, but I could use something a little bit more.
I need one of those back support office chairs. What?
Do you see on the back wall, or you guys have the monitor up?
You've got an office chair. Yours looks kind of like
mine is from my dinner table, and I'm in my kid's bedroom.
I ordered it on Amazon. I had to put it together. But it arrived at the house, and it was great. It's so comfortable.
Did you build TSN? I don't think we should have to pay for that.
No, I paid for it. I didn't even think to build TSN on that. It's my house, and it's my chair. I mean, I could be sitting on a stool, but
I want a chair.
We've been here for three hours.
A chair.
No,
Hazy?
Nice
listen, I'll go and, we'll double down on that.
But you know what you need is one of those
chairs.
I think those
I'm demanding
gaming,
a chair.
Okay,
I
like
those,
it.
I think the gaming chairs are really comfortable. I was at Staples the other day, and they got the high backs, and some of them have speakers in them and stuff.
Fortnite chairs for Christmas for me and Hazy B.
Yeah. We don't want them to look too silly, though, right?
They can't be wrapping
around the head.
No, we don't want to look like those YouTubers yelling into the, and they've got these high chairs, and a lot of them are playing games and screaming into the into the camera.
Yeah.
They've got
reasoning
chair
behind that. But yeah, we need to make sure that it looks dignified, but it's comfortable, and that's what we're looking for. Basically, the mullet of chairs, right?
Yeah,
business at the front, party in the back.
I agree.
All business up top, comfort when it comes to actually seating.
That's it. The Al's Brothers turtleneck of chairs.
Yeah.
That's all we need.
Yeah, I agree.
We're talking about Bettman and maybe him making an appearance tonight in a mask. And Robert tweets in, he said it'd be great if Bettman wore the Andy Reid face shield tonight.
He might, man.
If he comes out in a face shield,
Archer Zerbe, giving out the cup.
I'll collapse to the ground. I think it. I don't know why. I mean, I know we're trying to be safe, and you're seeing the masks yesterday. I didn't see a coach that wasn't wearing a mask yesterday. I'll tell you that.
I saw a couple. Like, I thought Sean McVay was going, he was pretty clap happy without the mask. And
well, Belichick had his turned up underneath his nose again.
Did you see
Gruden's
yesterday?
I honestly don't think it's reasonable for the coach. Gruden's looked like a pair of peel panties on his snout. I don't know what was up. I don't think it's reasonable for the coach to wear the mask where he's yelling. And I don't know. No one else. We talked about it last week. No one else on the sideline has one on. None of the players. Why does the coach have to?
I don't know. I guess again,
is it just for optics?
Optics. Maybe the PA demanded it. That wouldn't shock me if that's what it was. But yeah, it's some of them.
Yeah.
Most of them are wearing them, pretty consistently. But you still see guys that don't have them on. All the time. And they take them off, then they start talking, they take them off. It's kind of awkward when they start talking to the ref and they don't know what they're supposed to do.
Yeah,
but I think Bettman and the Andy Reid face shield tonight, I think that would be a strong look, and it should happen.
I agree. If they win, if Tampa wins tonight and Gary Bettman walks out in the Andy Reid face shield, I don't know what I'll do. Like, I may collapse to the ground laughing.
Well,
just because
right
I think it'll
fame.
Be a it'll be amazing. You're right.
Yeah. Like, it'll be a meme. It'll be a meme immediately. Gary Bettman and an Andy Reid face shield handing out the cup to Stamkos, who isn't playing. That's 2020 in a nutshell.
Exactly.
Joining us now, the Maple Twitter hotline, here is our hockey analyst, chief scout, Craig Button. What's up, Craig? How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, Brian. How are you doing?
Well, I'm gearing up for a big night of action. I mean, the Monday Nighter is going to be off the charts, or we hope, and the cup might be handed out tonight. How do you feel about Tampa's chances of closing it tonight? And if they don't, how nervous should they be about going seven?
Well, I think that they're the better team, but if they play game six like they played game five, they're just kidding themselves. They'll be talking like Vegas did. Oh, we deserve to win. Oh, we did all this, and you did nothing. You know what? They held the puck for long periods of time, and they didn't challenge Dallas. And I would say that if they get to a game seven, If they thought there was pressure in a game six, they ain't seen nothing yet if they have to play a game seven, because all the pressure, in my view, will shift to the Tampa Bay Lightning, because at this point in time, Dallas has nothing to lose.
Oh, I totally agree with that. You know, Tampa's been better. They are better. They're expected to win. Hudobin might be on fumes. If Dallas can grind out a win tonight, wouldn't shock me if it was an overtime game again, then the pendulum swings. And Tampa starts having flashbacks, and all the pressure's all of a sudden on them. And, you know, when I looked at Tampa tonight, you know, Hedman, I think, will show up. I think Point will show up. Kucherov will show up. Dallas, a bit of a different story, right? Like, Pavelski's has had a really good run. I thought Sagan really stepped up. I think he's getting better. I thought he looked pretty good the other night. But when you look at Dallas, you know, who's got to be the focal point? Like, who's got to step up tonight, and who should we be looking at? I don't think it can be Corey Perry every single game.
Rick Bonus. I think Rick Bonus has a real challenge with the injuries now to Hintz, Sekera, who is going to be a game time decision. And when you're a game time decision in game six of the Stanley Cup final, there's some uncertainty surrounding your ability to play. And, you know, if they got to put in another defenseman, he's already had to manage it with, you know, putting in Nick Camano and then Jake Dowling to replace Hintz. So, you know, you're trying to manage. From the coach's point of view, get players into positions where they don't get overwhelmed. And when you got a deep team on the other side, like the Tampa Bay Lightning, he's going to have to be really, really sharp in terms of his coaching on that bench, when to get players out, when, you know, make sure he doesn't get caught. He got caught in game four with Camano and Sekera out on the ice and Lindell as the right side defenseman when Point scored that goal to get back in. Well, guess what? In the last minute of the period in game five, he got caught again. You can't get caught because good teams are going to nail you. And that's who I think has to be the difference maker with all the injuries.
And Craig, you mentioned yesterday when we were chatting on air about not giving Tampa an opportunity on the power play and the discipline of Dallas. To me, that seems like a given. You have to make sure that you play hard whistle to whistle and not give them an opportunity with the man advantage because they seem to be feeling it right now.
No question about it. And not only was Tampa Bay feeling it, but Dallas was not doing a very good job of penalty killing. So, you know, you want to fix your penalty killing, but one really, really effective way to not worry about your penalty kill, don't take penalties. You know, Dallas really were really good 5-on-5 versus Tampa Bay in game five in that victory. And, you know, if you want to let skill get out on the ice and handle the puck and throw the puck around, they'll make you pay. So don't give them the opportunity. And as you point out, Jamie, whistle to whistle, play hard, you know, be determined, do what you need to do. But don't get into the areas that allow Tampa Bay what I would call, you know, one of those buy one, get one free coupons.
We were talking about Corey Perry earlier, Craig, where he got bought out in Anaheim. He took the one-year bounce-back contract on a good team in Dallas. And during the regular season, you wouldn't even know he was in the league. He just never factored into any conversations. But come playoff time, he's shown up. And in the Cup final, he's been great. We saw what he did a couple of nights ago. If you're his agent, because he's a UFA again after this year, what are you asking for? What is reasonable to expect? And what do you think other teams are going to throw at him?
Well, he's 35 years old, right? And let's keep in mind that all the players benefited from the 4.5 months off with respect to, you know, getting rested, not only physically, but also mentally and understanding what the grind is. You know, Joe Pavelski and Corey Perry, you don't have to tell them what the Stanley Cup playoffs are all about. They're going to show up. But the added rest has helped both those players because during the regular season, I mean, they delivered probably to what they were capable of, given their age and where they're at. And, you know, they've been fantastic because they are competitors and they understand. So, you know, Pavelski's got 2 years left, so that's not a concern. Corey Perry, if you're an NHL team, I would do exactly the same thing. I'm not giving Corey Perry a long-term contract. I'm not giving Corey Perry a two-year contract based on the regular season. And this isn't going to happen again. We might have a compressed season next year, which might make it even harder on Corey Perry. Do I think it was a really good, strong signing by the Dallas Stars? Yeah. But don't get fooled by these playoffs and think that now that's deserving. I'm talking about an NHL team.
Right.
Agents are always going to ask for more. But an NHL team, no way. Sorry, I'll give you a one-year deal. I'll give you bonuses and incentives. But if you want a long-term deal, phone somebody else.
I think someone's going to get fooled. I think so. Go ahead.
Craig, Bobby came out with a tweet today regarding Jack Eichel and him possibly being unhappy in Buffalo, whatever the scenario is. If you're the GM in Buffalo, Kevin Adams, how do you handle the situation where there's smoke, there's fire? Do you just go to Eichel and say, look, do you want to play here or not, or get to the bottom of it? How do you handle it?
Well, I think, Jeff, you nailed it. You know what? There's only one way. Go right to Jack. Where are you at? Where's your head at? Like, you know, whether it's a little bit of smoke, whether there's a smoldering fire underneath that smoke, I agree with you. And, you know, if I'm an NHL team, I'm going to be phoning Kevin Adams at every turn to find out what I can do to acquire Jack Eichel. But for the Buffalo Sabres, now it becomes another, I guess, uncertainty in where they're headed. I mean, this is their best player. This is their superstar. And if he doesn't want to be there, and I mean, you know how it is, Jeff and Jamie, players aren't going to say they don't want to be there. But if you get the sense that they feel that there's a better place for them, you know, it's going to be hard to really, you know, put a stake in the ground with that player as your key player. So Kevin Adams has got to get to the bottom of it, and he's got to get to it quickly because the Stanley Cup final is coming to an end, and we're right into the draft and into free agency. So his opportunity, if it is the case that he has to consider moving Jack, might not be any greater than it is right now.
Craig, when you were a manager, you were a young general manager, and Kevin Adams is an inexperienced general manager. Do you feel like there's maybe potentially a couple calls that of experienced managers looking to pick his pocket or give him some advice? I'm sure you had one or two of those scenarios in your career when you were a young manager.
Yeah, I would say it was a lot more than one or two, Jamie. here's what I always felt. I always felt like I was in the deep part of the water. The waves were coming over my head, and the GMs were looking to throw me a life jacket. And
like, how dumb are some of the comments, Craig? What are we talking about here?
Well, they're dumb. But like, let me just tell you, let me finish that. I thought I was catching a life jacket, and then I realized it was an anchor. They were trying to sink me right to the bottom of the water. Like, you know, they weren't trying to help me out of it. They were trying to drown me. Jeff, it's amazing. Like, you know, what players, what managers will offer you and whatnot. I'm going to share this story with you. Glenn Sather was the manager in New York, and he had just become the manager in New York. I had just become in Calgary. And he had a player by the name of Michael Groshek. And, you know, he was trying to peddle Michael Groshek and peddle Michael Groshek and peddle. And I had zero interest in Michael Groshek. But, you know, you're engaging and you're listening. And so he's telling me all about Michael Groshek, and this is day after day. Finally, one day on the phone, and he says to me, he compares them, I've gone blank. What was the Czech player that played for the Red Wings? Really gifted, right-shot Czech player. Very skilled.
Robert Lang?
You guys know him. Robert Lang. That's who it was. So Glenn says, do you like Robert Lang? And I said, yeah, I like Robert Lang. He goes, let me tell you a story about Robert Lang. He goes, we had him in Edmonton as a free agent, and we let him go. He goes, turned out to be a pretty good player. I said, oh, boy, did he ever. How did that happen, Glenn? So he kind of goes through the story of what happened with Robert Lang. So he says, Michael Groshek is exactly like Robert Lang. So I'm on the phone, and I'm thinking, okay, I can be the putz, or I can push right back. And I said, well, Glenn, I'm just a little bit concerned. He goes, what do you mean? I go, well, you're a smart guy. You just told me this guy's like Robert Lang. I can't imagine you're going to make the same mistake twice.
Right. How do you respond to that?
Oh, he said he'll phone me. He told me think about it and phone me back.
Okay. Well, that's nice of him.
Needless to say, I didn't get another call about Michael Groshek.
Right, exactly. with Craig Button. So as you mentioned, we're only a week away from the draft. And I think we all know what's going to happen with the first pick. And then beyond that, you know, there's some debate who goes two, who goes three and beyond. The Leafs pick 15th. If we don't get a chance to talk to you between now and the first round next week, can you give us a couple of names you think might be on the board, and you think this team, the way they build their philosophies with the draft, they might be looking at with that 15th pick?
Yeah, well, I mean, here's what I say, and I never believe you should put a square peg in a round hole. So when I talk about Braden Schneider as a right shot defenseman, I think he's absolutely in that group of players that are in and around that pick. And then you start to think about, you know, what type of player the Toronto Maple Leafs could use. And I think Braden Schneider is that type of player. He plays the game in a lot of the similar fashion that Jacob Trouba plays the game. And he's got a late birthday, you know, September of 2001. I think he's closer to playing than not playing. So, you know, we talk about, you know, acquiring, you know, number one centers and good defensemen and right shot defensemen. Well, you can't trade for them. So you better look at drafting them. And, you know, one thing I'm going to, like, and I've been saying this now, don't pay any attention to this best player available BS, because it's BS. Because if everybody knew who the next best player available was, they'd all do it. You know, you're looking at a group of players always to say, okay, this is a center, this is a winger, this is a defenseman, this is a goalie if you want to consider a goalie. And then you look at, okay, are they in the right group? What are their strengths? What's their development path? And then you have to make a decision. But this idea, unless your name's Sidney Crosby, Meryl Lemieux, or Connor McDavid, best player available doesn't exist in the draft. Anybody tries to tell you that, they don't know what they're talking about.
Craig, I know you don't have the crystal ball, but do you feel like the goaltender's going to go before 15? I mean, he's kind of all over the map. Like, I can't get a read on
Askarov, the Russian.
Yeah, Askarov. Goal. Like, but I'm talking about, like, some teams that need goaltending are picking a little bit higher. Like, you know, could you envision him going off the board in the top 10, or do you feel like maybe 10 to 20 type of thing, just depending on, I guess, needs, like you just said, correct?
Well, yeah, needs, and you know, I think he's a franchise goalie, Jamie. I think right. I said it. He's the best goalie I've seen entering a draft since Carey Price. Now, right. Why don't we rewind a little bit and go back to 2005? You know, Carey Price. You know, when the Montreal Canadiens drafted Carey Price, there was lots of people going, "What are the Canadiens doing? They have Jose Theodore." Well, I guess right. They knew what they were doing because they valued it. Listen, if he went in the top five, I wouldn't be surprised. But I understand, you know, that in the course of the draft and looking at goaltenders, and as you point out about the crystal ball, you know, right. I don't know where they're. But Spencer Knight went 13th last year, and I think Spencer Knight's a really good goaltender, is going to be a number one for a long time. I don't think Spencer Knight's as good as Staroff. So wow. I would say that if, you know, he starts to get into that range, you know, whatever, 9, 10, 11, 12. I think teams have to absolutely be considering him. But it wouldn't shock me one bit if he goes in the top 5, 6, or 7. Not at all. He's too good.
Yeah, nice. Exactly. And when you're dealing with goaltending right now, I mean, it's never about needs tonight. Like, he's not playing anyway. He's not going to play for 2 or 3 years, yeah. Right? So
that's true, Brian, but guess what? Most of these players aren't going to contribute for 2 or 3 years.
True.
Even if you are picked in the top 6 or the top 7 or whatever, it takes time. And you know what? Like, some players come in, but you know, the top players, we know Lafreniere's coming in and contributing. But look at the first 3 picks last year. Jack Hughes, Kaapo Kakko, and Kirby Dach, they wore NHL sweaters. They didn't contribute to their team during the regular season. They were in development mode. That's what they were doing. They were developing in the NHL. They didn't make any significant contribution to their teams. Kirby Dach coming back in the playoffs played very well. But that was a long time after he'd finished playing the regular season. So, you know, you start going past the top 3 and you get into 6 to 20 and everything. These guys aren't ready to contribute.
No, of course not. No, and I mean, he's a fascinating prospect. Goaltenders in the first round, you know, you don't see them a lot. You certainly don't see them a lot in the top 10. And no. I'm with you, Noodles. Reading mock drafts and he's all over the place.
Well, he's all over the map, and it's interesting because, you know, I had somebody ask me out of Ottawa, would Ottawa pick at 5? Like, you know, and he seems like a franchise goaltender. Again, I know it's a little bit higher risk for goaltenders because we're seeing traditionally them mature at 25, 26 now. Well, that's not the case with Carter Hart. with Vasilevsky, with Carey Price, with Marc-Andre Fleury. A lot of those guys got really good when they were 21, 22, 23 years old. Hellebuck's now really good at, what, 25, 26. So if you're a special player and you can play, it doesn't matter of your age. And if this kid projects to be what we think he is and what, Craig, you're saying he is, then he should be respected in that top 5 to 10.
Well, if the Leafs, if he's still there on the board on 15, don't you think the Leafs have to take him?
For sure. Like,
they haven't drafted and developed a goalie in a long, long time.
Forever.
Yeah, well, if you think he's a franchise goalie and you think he's a top player, I mean, you know, the thing about drafting goaltenders is everybody knows that, you know, they're not going to come in and do what Tom Barrasso did, you know, winning Rookie of the Year in Vezina as an 18-year-old out of high school. That just doesn't happen. But the goaltenders, you know, you need them and you need to draft them. I mean, you look at Ilya Samsonov, who was drafted in 2015. He now is ready to assume the role of number one. And, you know, he's 23 years old and, you know, he's ready. He last year he played in a backup role. But if you don't draft him, I'd like, yeah, you can look and say, okay, we can acquire them. But at some point in time, you need to get them. And make no mistake about this. We know there's goaltenders that come from different parts of the draft, just like there's centers and defensemen. But I can tell you what, going into a draft, you know, nobody can sit down and say there's a goaltender in this draft, in my view, that can say there's anybody in the class of Askarov.
Well, that's high praise, and we'll find out in just over a week. Enjoy Game 6 tonight, buddy. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this, Craig.
We will. Yeah, thanks, you guys.
There he is, Craig Button, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. It is Maple Toyota's birthday, and they're giving you the gifts this month. Buy any new vehicle and receive a free gift. Red tag savings continue with rates from 0%. Yeah, I mean, the goaltender in the first round, it's kind of going against the wisdom of recent drafts, so to speak. But
he didn't have a very good juniors either.
Well, but that's two weeks, though. Like, was there anybody?
I know, that's
why
I couldn't do it. All I hear about is all the talk about this guy, and there was games he was pulled like quickly, and at the juniors, I'm like, this is the next Carey Price. But I don't know. That's why you gotta watch him again, and
it'll be fascinating if he's on the board at 15. What the Leafs are gonna do?
Like, if you don't think the Leafs should take him,
I think they should too. If they believe in him, clearly, but that goes without saying. But if they feel like he is a guy that will be the number one in, even if it's in 5 years, you got to invest in it.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't think he's making it to 15 because Edmonton would take him at 14. I think Edmonton should take that goalie at 14 if he's available.
Is Fleury the only goalie ever to go first overall?
No.
No, Ricky DiPietro.
What a play. With Roberto Luongo already there, we got to take DiPietro.
Yeah.
That's got to be the dumbest draft in history. Like, that's even worse than a bust, because you had Luongo already on your team.
Young Luongo.
Yeah. And you're like, no, Rick DiPietro is just better. That's the better play. Got to go with DiPietro. And then you trade Luongo. Yeah. Just an asinine run.
Hey, you go back sometimes all the time, Hayes, where you're looking
the
at
Leaf torture.
Their Leaf torture draft picks. Go back on the New York Islanders path.
Yeah. Oh, terrible.
Like, that is like Milbury's tenure and before that and after that, man.
It's
sickening.
Sickening. And I have no affiliation with the Islanders. And it sickens me. I can't imagine how disgusting they must feel. You know, they just handed away Chara, Spezza, Luongo, Rafi Torres, Todd Bertuzzi,
Berard.
Brian McCabe.
Yeah.
Berard. Yeah,
you
like
name it.
A long
like
list of guys.
Gong show.
That wasn't a total sideshow. That was that operation. There was something.
Yeah,
there'll be a document. There should be a 30 for 30 on that.
There Seriously. Might be. Well, didn't they? They had the owner that
they
was
the
like put $5,000 down, like that duped them.
Absolutely.
It was a gong show.
It was. All right, Scott Mitchell, our Jays reporter, coming up. We'll get him to explain the reasoning behind Shoemaker going Game 1 tomorrow as opposed to Rio going Game 1. Rio will take the mound in Game 2 on Wednesday. So what is the reasoning behind it? Can he wrap his head around it? Can he explain it to us? And how do the Jays find a way to beat Tampa in a best 2 out of 3 starting tomorrow down at the Trop? We'll get into that with Scotty next. All right, Best Bets brought to you by ProLine later in the hour. Stone Cold Al's brother, I'm sure we'll hear from him at some point before 7 o'clock. Ravens -3.5 at home tonight against Kansas City. So we got that cooking. We got the hockey game going tonight. Baseball starting up tomorrow. NBA Finals starting Wednesday night. And take advantage while you can, man. Might be a few, in about 2 or 3 weeks, we're probably going to be longing for doubleheaders and, you know, 5 games in a day and 12:30 p.m. starts, you know, all that good stuff that we might have complained about a month or two ago. But Jays get started tomorrow, and they have done something that I cannot recall happening before. Listen, I do not pretend to be a baseball historian. I'm sure Tim Kirkjian or someone like that could come on here and reference a situation in the past where a clear-cut number one, like not someone that shares the billing. We mentioned this earlier. Last year, if it's Cole on the mound game one or Verlander game one, you're like, whatever. Let's see what we got, and guess who's coming at you game two. Ryu, Shoemaker, Walker, not exactly on even terms, but Ryu will start game two, Shoemaker game one. If it gets to game three, Taijuan Walker goes for game three on Thursday. Here's our Jays reporter, Scott Mitchell. Scotty, we've been buzzing about this for 2.5 hours now. I think every Blue Jay fan is trying to get a read on this. Charlie Montoyo cited creativity for starting Ryu game two, Shoemaker tomorrow. Can you wrap your head around it? If so, please explain.
Yeah, look, I mean, there's layers to this. There's so many layers to this. And, you know, it all starts with the fact that, you know, I think you can look at this as it shows you exactly where the Blue Jays pitching depth is. Because when you look at the Rays on the other side, I mean, Blake Snell, Tyler Glasnow, Charlie Morton, you can shake those up, order them however you want, and nobody in Tampa is going to argue about it because those are three very, very good starters. So I think this really shows that it's Ryu and then everybody else. But the reason they did this essentially was they look at this as they're weighting the games all the same. And it's so unique because we've never seen a 3-game series. We've never seen this wild card round. And what they're looking at is they're trying to maximize their bullpen in this instance. And, you know, they believe that there's going to be 2 bullpen-heavy games just because they don't have the starters and the horses behind Ryu. So what they want to do is they want to put those bullpen games in games 1 and 3, hope Ryu goes deep in game 2 to give that bullpen a break if you do need to get to game 3. And, I mean, the magic scenario is that somehow you find a way to scrap, win game 1, and then you've got your ace going in game 2. And then the second question that's born out of that is why Matt Shoemaker instead of Taijuan Walker, who has clearly been their second most consistent starter. And the answer to that is there's a track record of success. Matt Shoemaker was pretty good in 3 starts against the and when you look at him over his career, he's 4-0 with a 2.56 ERA in 7 starts against Tampa. So when you factor in that confidence and the fact that he's pitched well against this team and the fact that he's platoon neutral with a ton of left-handed bats in that Tampa lineup, he gets lefties out equally as well as righties. They feel like they can get through that first 4 or 5 innings. He's going to have a limited number of bullets and then be able to get into that bullpen, that rested bullpen, and be able to kind of claw through that. And when you look at Taijuan Walker, his numbers, he absolutely gets crushed by lefties. So that's the reason it's not Walker.
Do you, I mean, everything that you just laid out for us, it sounds good. Like, you following the team,
Attaboy, Scotty.
No, I'm just saying, like, it sounds like, you know, obviously they've done a deep dive on it and crunched the numbers. But you knowing this team, you tracking this team every day, do you believe this is the right move? Just from your gut instinct of what you know of this team.
Well, look, they've talked about the fact that Ryu on an extra day of rest has been pretty good. I'm not completely buying into that narrative, but, you know, it is different. And, you know, the traditional aspect is you put your horse on the mound in game one, but that's in a little bit of a longer series. So they're trying to weight these games all the same. And the thing I keep coming back to is no matter what you look like or how you kind of weight these games, what you want your staff to look like, how creative and cute you want to get, it's undoubtedly better to go into game two with a 1-0 lead and a rested bullpen than it is to go into game two having Ryu on the hill but down a game with a bullpen that's been worked pretty hard because Matt Shoemaker couldn't get through 3 or 4 innings. So I would have gone the traditional route. But when you look at this series and you look at the way it's kind of laid out, they're going to have to win a game, essentially, that's going to be the type of game that's going to be tomorrow night with Matt Shoemaker. So whether it's game 1, game 3, they felt like this was the best scenario. And then the factor that probably we're not talking enough about is the fact that, you know, there is some talk that, that Ryu kind of wanted that extra day. Charlie Montoya said that's not the case. And, you know, there is some talk that, you know, he was feeling it a little bit Thursday when he threw a season high, you know, number of pitches and went deeper into the ballgame than he had all season. So if there was that conversation and he kind of pushed to go game two or said he wasn't feeling quite right, then I think it probably explains it a little bit more clearly as well.
That would make all the sense in the world, and why not just say it?
Yeah.
You know, I know this team is allergic to transparency, so that would probably explain it. But that would make sense. You know, if Ryu was like, I'm comfortable in with an extra day, I think I'll be lights out in game two, okay. You know, it's not conventional. It may not be the way we want it to play out, but still, we're guaranteed to play in game two, so we're guaranteed to have you playing, you know, and starting 50% of the first two games, whichever way it happens to roll out. But I found it somewhat intriguing and I think somewhat comical that Montoya explained this through the guise of creativity, claiming that this team is very creative and they've been creative all year. I think of creativity on the fly. I think of creativity as a team that wings it and makes it up as it goes and it works out for them. I don't think anyone would define this organization in that fashion. I mean, they come up with a plan and they basically stick to it. So are you buying that this is creative, or is this just simply analytical and they're laying it out the way they always have?
Well, yeah, creativity, analytics, you know, I think
maybe it's semantics, but they come up with a plan and they go with it, right?
Yeah,
there's no creativity during the game. I haven't seen it.
Look, I think they've been winging it when it comes to the rotation almost all season long. So, I mean, you know, I think they're trying to piece it together, and they know that whether you look at Taiwan Walker, whether you look at Matt Shoemaker, whether you want to throw Robbie Ray into that mix, these aren't great options. So in two games, you're going to have to get quote-unquote creative, and you're going to have to just hope that you can get through these games with an extended bullpen and with a fresh bullpen. And, you know, I think the track record of success that Shoemaker has against the Rays is really what led them to this decision. And, you know, it makes sense. I mean, you know, you want to talk matchups, you want to talk, you know, analytics. He's pitched well against this team, and there's a long history of him pitching well against this team. I think the question with Shoemaker is he's thrown three innings since August 21st. So how sharp is he going to be?
Right.
You know, how many bullets does he have? But when you look at the creativity part, I think really what they're trying to push is the fact that they know there's going to be two bullpen games, and they want their ace in the middle of those to kind of break that up and give them a day of rest.
Is there a... I guess an X factor for you, like somebody you're tracking, whether it's our favorite player right now.
It's Kirk,
the grit grinder.
It's Alejandro Kirk.
Is it the little grit grinder? Is he going to be the difference here for the Blue Jays getting or winning this series? Like, is there something other than just the pitching rotation that you're circling and saying, you know what, the Jays, if they get this, they'll be all right?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head from the lineup perspective. Is what kind of role does Alejandro Kirk play? Is he in the lineup tomorrow night as the DH? Does he catch tomorrow with Danny Jansen catching game two? You know, he's been the guy with Ryu all season long, and they're comfortable with that tandem. So I think Kirk for sure, whether he, you know, pinch hits, how they use him in that sense, because this guy is clearly one of their toughest outs in the entire lineup. You know, even at the age of 21, with the lack of experience he has, he hits the ball hard and he's a tough at bat for any pitcher. So I think how they use him is going to be interesting on the position player side. The guy I'm watching for and the guy who I think truly could be an X factor is Jordan Romano.
Right.
This guy was completely lights out in August, goes down with a freak finger injury at the end of the month, and he's been working his way back. He's been throwing live BP, so we haven't seen the roster yet. We don't know if he's even going to be on it, but they seemed optimistic that he'd be able to play a role despite not being able to pitch in a game down the stretch here. So I think he could really be a weapon. If he looks anything like he looked like in August, it completely changes the complexion of this bullpen against the team that has one of the best power bullpens in baseball. So it would give Charlie Montoya the a little bit more ability to match up. But, I mean, that might be asking a lot for a guy who hasn't pitched since August 29th. But he's the definite X factor for me.
Yeah, and I think P Pearson may not come off as the conventional X factor because of his name, but I think he would apply the same logic, Scotty. And he looked great the other night. He hit 101.5 on the gun. I mean, he looks like he's ready, and I'm curious to see how they're going to use him. Like, is he a guy that's going to – can he give you two innings in the middle of the lineup? Can he give you the fourth and fifth inning? Do they keep him for the back end of the bullpen? How do you see them using Pearson?
Yeah, it's a great question. And look, he threw 25 pitches the other night, and yeah, the 101 and the big radar gun numbers obviously kind of show that he looks like he's over that elbow injury. I think the command was a little loose. I don't know that they're going to be comfortable bringing him into a leverage situation as a guy who has barely pitched in the major leagues, but he's clearly got the talent to be that type of X factor. And, you know, as far as how they use him, it's going to be interesting. Do you hold him back for game three, you know, in front of Taijuan Walker potentially as an opener? He's going to have about 40 pitches. So that's not a whole lot of bullets. That's two innings max. So yeah, you're going to have to figure out what is most comfortable, and him never coming out of a bullpen until the other night, since college, it takes a little longer for him to warm up. How comfortable is he coming in with runners on base? Probably not very comfortable at all. So they're going to want to get him a clean inning. So it will be interesting to see how they use him, but, I don't think at this point there's a plan. I think he's just a bonus.
Yeah. I think clearly the bullpen, they understand they need it. That's in large part why they shaped up the rotation being what it is. There's certain guys you know are going to pitch. You know Dolis is going to pitch. You know Romano's going to pitch if he's healthy enough and he's on the roster come tomorrow. And then I think beyond that, you know, Pearson likely factors in. Hatch will likely factor in. But what's your bullpen setup if, let's say, Shoemaker's out in the third inning? He gives you three tomorrow, and you've got to get six or six plus if it goes into extras. Who are your go-to, you know, three, four, five bullpen arms that you fully expect Montoya to use?
Yeah, look, there's a couple of interesting names, because when you look at what this Rays lineup can do is they mix and match better against against opposing pitchers, and they find those platoon advantages. It's an uncanny knack, and their lineup or their whole roster is built to be able to do that. So I think Ryan Borucki is going to be a key from the left side. A lot of lefties in that lineup. I think, you know, those guys are going to be key in terms of neutralizing them. Brian Borucki, Robbie Ray. We'll see if Anthony Kay makes the roster. Those left-handers could come in real handy. And then Cole is a guy as well that's probably going to see some high leverage spots, because similar to Shoemaker, he has that ability to get lefties out as a right-hander, which is real key when you have that three batter role and you can't really kind of mix and match like you used to. So you're going to have to get those platoon neutral guys, and you're going to have to hope they can get through the meat of the order in leverage spots. And I think, you know, Dolis and Bass are the guys at the back end. And then the key guys are going to be Cole, Borucki, Thomas Hatch. Those three guys are going to be asked to get some very important outs in this series.
Well, it starts tomorrow. We'll see. It's going to be a fun ride. Let's hope it goes more than just a couple of days. Great stuff as always. We'll do it again soon. Thank you, Scotty.
All right, fellas. Take care.
Scott Mitchell, our Jays reporter. So there you go. You know, he laid it out. It's very sensible. I understand it. I still would have gone with conventional wisdom. I guess I'm a sucker for that. And if Rio is at 100%, I think I'd throw him out there and try to set the tone for the series. And I think it sends a message to your team. It sends a message to the opposition. You know, we're not going to overthink this. We're going to give you our best, and it's go time. But, you know, of all the sports, to take kind of every possible angle into account, baseball would be at the front of the line.
Yeah.
And, you know, he said it. Shoemaker's got a good history at the Trop and against the Rays, and he's only going to give you like three innings, four innings tops, and then you go into the bullpen, which is relatively healthy and relatively you know, loaded with gas at this point, starting tomorrow.
You're right. I can see it. I think they, in the back of their mind, if you do your best early on and he gets rinsed, then you know they have nothing, right?
Like you're saying, if Rio gets lit up.
Say Rio has an off night, and doesn't last six or seven and gets lit up, and he's in your first game, you're basically saying, like, we've got nothing else. If you go with him in the middle, you almost try and battle through that first game. That's probably, you know, again, numbers behind it.
Yeah, that's the thing. That would still be a very intangible type of take that, you know, there's a mood swing with Ryu going in game two. I don't think they're even thinking about moods or the clubhouse reaction. This is purely analytical.
They're just numbers. Yeah, it's just numbers. Flat-out numbers.
And listen, they're not wrong in terms of the bullpen. They think game one and game three, they're going to need a lot of arms and maybe a lot of pitches and a lot of outs out of the bullpen. So they're trying to space that out and basically put a splint in between the two of them, and that would be Ryu. Yeah. That's assuming he doesn't get lit up for the first time really all year. But you got to bank on that. You got to have faith in your number one guy. So I think he'll show up on Wednesday for game two. There's no reason to expect otherwise.
Yep.
But we're so focused on the arms. I mean, it's still they got to manufacture runs, and it's not going to be easy against Tampa, you know, who might have the best overall staff in all of baseball, or certainly they're on a short list. But this is Bichette's first chance on the biggest stage. Biggio's first chance on the biggest stage. Vladdy's coming alive.
Yeah, I'd like to see him, you know, continue on. Like
Kirk.
Yeah. Our buddy Al.
The guy's
going to
be taking
Kirk.
Playoff hacks. This guy was not even in the league like 3 weeks ago. Yeah. And now he could be stepping up to the plate in big, big moments over the next 72 hours.
That's crazy.
Life comes at you fast, man.
Yeah, well, he's got to embrace it. Like, he can become a hero pretty quickly if he has a nice showing here and it is a difference maker for the Jays.
Absolutely. So I guess we lost Owen. Owen's just not going to battle through the elements.
Done. Yeah,
he's just, for whatever reason. So I don't know what that means for his pick tonight. He's supposed to be on the board. I guess we're not playing
maybe
the
Al's
game.
Maybe Al's brother can choose it for him.
Maybe Al's brother will come. Wow. Okay. Actually, for the first time, was not actually expecting that. But here he is, Stone Cold Al's brother. I guess, are you going to represent O? Have you talked to him at all? He just dusted us off, so I don't know what his story is. But what's the word from O and your pick here tonight, Al's brother?
I have not spoken with O about it, but for me, my pick, it's tough. You know, this is going to be great theater. It's one of the most anticipated games in recent memory. Two superstar quarterbacks, two potential Hall of Fame bound coaches, Monday Night Football. For me, my pick, I'm going with Patty Mahomes in the Kansas City Chiefs +3.5. He's undefeated against the spread in his career as the underdog. So I'm going to stick with that trend. Give me KC +3.5.
All right. Listen, I don't think you can go wrong with either pick. You can reason both picks. And as you just said, you get Mahomes plus points. And not just like a pick 'em or plus one. You're getting 3.5. All you got to do is keep it within a field goal. I mean, that's not a bad spot to be in for anybody.
Right.
But I'm on the Ravens tonight. I've been saying that all day. I think the Ravens are playing so well right now. They're the team with a chip on the shoulder. They're at home. They're the team that needs this. This is a platform game for them. This is house money for the Chiefs. They don't care. Right?
Yeah.
Like they're not – Vegas lost. Vegas is okay, but they're not great. The Chargers are not great. Denver's brutal. Like, the Chiefs know they've won the AFC West. They know it. This is maybe a battle for that top seed. So
yeah,
I think they'll be motivated for that.
Too. It's an ego thing.
It is an
too.
Ego
you
thing.
Know that.
But,
you
like,
know.
Lamar Jackson's 0-2 against Mahomes. The Ravens are the team that can't win the big game. They got to have it tonight. I think they show up, and I think they play well. But there you go. Al's brother is on Kansas City +3.5. We'll see if O will take that pick or not.
Well, we'll just have to put him in for that. Because
I don't need to hear the complaining out of him tomorrow, and you know, so
all
now
right.
He just
You'll
texted.
Text
I guess
him.
He does have power enough to text. Still, his phone is working and his Wi-Fi. And I guess he said he's on Baltimore, so he's going against Stone Cold Al's brother. But there you have it. All right, we'll get to our best bets. Brought to you by ProLine. Tee up both games tonight. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, time now for our best bets. Brought to you by ProLine. Looking at the props tonight for the Monday Nighter. It's hopefully going to be a shootout. I mean, you called it earlier, Noodles. This is feels like a hyped-up fight where some guy takes a dive in the first round.
I hope not. I mean, yeah. I'm hoping it's a fantastic game. I'm hoping both games tonight are fantastic,
yes.
The football game and the hockey game.
Right. I'll take some overtime and let's say like a 54-51 shootout thriller.
Ooh.
That's what I'd love to see. Tackling has been a real issue. We didn't talk about it today. We'll get into it more tomorrow with Marcellus. Seems like no one can tackle in the NFL. And it's just a lot of really high-scoring games, and I hope it happens tonight because the props would indicate that it should. I'm over the number, Mark Ingram, total yards rushing tonight. Over the number, Travis Kelce, total receptions. Under the number, longest field goal made. Throw down 20, you can score 85. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. ProLine is the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, and matchup stats on your phone. ProLine, put your knowledge on the line. I think we see Stammer skating around with a cup tonight.
Yeah.
Is he put on full gear or what?
Oh, yeah. You put the full gear on, the jersey, everything. Absolutely. I think even if you are on the ace squad, you do that. But, you know, I don't know. I thought Tampa was going to win the other night. So if I choose Tampa tonight, I would be potentially 0 for 2. But I think they win.
I'm on Tampa
tonight. I think they win tonight.
Yeah, I think Tampa, I think they've been clearly the better team. I think they are. And I think they come out guns a blazing tonight. I'm on Tampa tonight. And again, I like Baltimore tonight. I guess I was going to take the Ravens minus 3.5, of course. But I like the Ravens tonight. I do. And tomorrow we'll have a Blue Jay playoff game to tee up. We'll be looking back potentially on the hockey season, looking back on week 3 of the NFL, and start looking ahead to the NBA Finals on Wednesday night as well. So it's going to be a fun week, fun couple of weeks. NHL draft next week, free agency in a week and a half.
Trades, all sorts of. We have we've got – we didn't have a prop bet or anything, but we had some odds that potentially there'd be a trade tomorrow.
If the cup goes out tonight, wouldn't be shocking if by 4 p.m. tomorrow there is one.
Exactly.
For sure. All right, we are out of here. Enjoy the games tonight. Enjoy your evenings. We are back tomorrow at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.
At Scarborough Nissan, the health and safety of the community and their employees is a top priority. With extra safety measures in place, Scarborough Nissan welcomes you to experience the Rediscover the Road sales event on now, where you can finance a 2020 Nissan Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or receive an up to $5,000 cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, driving satisfaction on Eglinton Avenue East at Warden Avenue. Visit ScarboroughNissan.com.
You've been listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. Finance a 2020 Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or get a cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.